Well, I heard that a professor in one of our large universities asked a member of the junior class to tell him the principal cause of divorce. And with that wisdom, which is far beyond his years, the young man answered, marriage. And you really can't say he wasn't just exactly right. But I'm sure it's not the answer that was expected. Actually, if we look upon life for what it really is, a training school, a place where we're supposed to learn something, then when great groups of people, nations, do not learn, they are in trouble. When individuals do not learn, their difficulties multiply. And of all difficulties for human beings, human relationships are the most complex and difficult. We probably do not always realize this and have a kind of optimism that we can go through a complete lifetime in comparative ease. Well, a few make it. But for the majority, life becomes a series of decisions. Not that they are in themselves tragic, though they are difficult, but they are decisions that call upon resources within ourselves, resources that we do not like to be forced to use. We do not like to accept pain, sorrow, loss, separation, infidelity, or any of these relationships of life, which test the caliber of individuals. Also, we are divided in our allegiances always by that great separation which was for thousands of years called the church and the state. Now, the church today is simply a term which we can apply to the problems of the inner life of the individual. And the state applies to his external and environmental difficulties. Therefore, we all live on a two-level code, a code from the outside which forces decisions upon us, and a code from the inside which is supposed to provide us with ideals and incentives by means of which we can bear with dignity the problems of the outside world. Many people are not equipped for this, and it is difficult to and unhappy to say that in the last 50 years the strength of the inner code has diminished for most people. We are no longer dominated by what might be termed traditional rules, nor is the church strong enough to demand allegiance to various moral codes which have been presented to the world over the period of thousands of years. The individual, trying to adjust to the environment, sacrifices the integrities of his inner life. And if he tries to live according to the inner life, he runs into confusion and conflict in the environmental world. So we are all torn. Torn between ideals and what we like to think of as realities. Realities, however, are merely temporary, passing conditions of society. But realities go on forever. Thus, we have to really consider what happens to people. Why is it that the divorce rate is increasing and that laws and rules are being made every day which cater primarily to escape mechanisms? We do not wish to be forced into a head-on collision with either society or our own inner conscience. To avoid or evade these responsibilities of decision, we have to call upon resources. What resources does the average person of today, especially the younger person, have to fall back on in an emotional or mental emergency? What background have we built to maintain life, to maintain those things and values which make life significant, meaningful, useful, and practical? Well, most young people today have not had training in what Comenius called the mother school. The mother, in turn, is in a state of personal emotional tension and confusion. The inside of the person, dominated by environmental pressures, develops fatigues and gradually lowers the level of dispositional controls. So the family today is made up very largely of tired, tense, worried, frightened people. And children coming into this environment gain very little of basic integrities. In many homes, of course, efforts are definitely made to take care of the moral life of the small child. Perhaps every effort is made to indoctrinate them with the religious generalities of the family. But if the child sees that the parents can't make it and are unable to live their own teaching, it is very difficult to assure the young person that the pattern is secure. It is not. Now, in addition to the generalities of the matter, we have passed through tremendous insecurities. Now, the world has always had them, and there has to be a reason why. There has to be a reason why, in the last 3,000 or 4,000 years, we have had over 8,000 large and small wars. Now, they are all the way from small attacks and defenses in the jungle to the tremendous tragedies of the present century. These conflicts appear to be the work of some great evil force. But actually, they represent the fact that up to the present time, human society has never been able to keep the rules which would not make conflict necessary, or inevitable, if not necessary. Actually, the world as it is not being offended or destroyed by some terrible force in space. It is simply constantly building patterns, and these patterns are so deficient that they fall apart every so many years or centuries into a great catastrophe. The answer, of course, is that we must face these things until we are willing to make the necessary changes in our own conduct. Now, many people, of course, are not aware that they can make such changes. But there is constant indoctrination in that direction. We are warned and assured that if we take the right steps, live correctly, these problems will solve themselves. But for some reason, the problems are not solved because, for some other reason, we are not living correctly. What is the matter with society in the level of family and home life? It is being battered to pieces by ambition. It is being undermined by competition. And it is also being demoralized by luxury. Someone asked a Greek philosopher if he wished to curse a man, what would he say? And the old philosopher thought for a while. Then he said, if that was to come to me, I would say to that man, may your son live in luxury. He says, that is the worst thing I can think of. Well, we got a lot of sons living in luxury these days, and many more that want to. But the fact of the matter is that the individual's and the collective's difficulties arise from ambition, selfishness, competition, and lack of discipline. Our ancestors had more discipline because life was more simple. And another factor that controlled things largely until the middle or later part of the 19th century was the power of religion. In Europe during the Middle Ages and early modern times, the religious situation was so tight that there could be very little deviation from it, except among a certain group that was regarded as impossible anyway. The same is true in this country. Our ancestors had a much more complete religious environment. They believed in it, they lived according to it to the best of their abilities, and they also rejected those who failed to conform. Now, conformity to theology is a matter today in which more and more people are objecting. But in those days when no one did object successfully, the religious background formed a kind of support, a framework, a basis upon which human society could function. The golden rules were respected. The Ten Commandments were obeyed as much as possible. And all the various elements of human relationship were strongly influenced by various religious moralities, especially in this country, the morality of Christianity. So we had certain strengths and also certain tendencies for those who tried to break away to be forced back by the environment in which they lived. They could not escape without losing the respect of their associates. Today all this has changed. But in the process of changing, we have lost necessary values along with some observances and conventionalities which were probably artificial in the beginning. So today we are more or less on our own. Religion is acceptable to those who accept it. It is not acceptable to those who do not accept it. And there is no particular stigma in society either way. The scientific mind feels rather inclined to atheism, or at least agnosticism, and considers progress to be a constantly increasing space research. The other group, religious group, is feeling a little martyred at this time, but are trying to hold on to conventions, many of which simply will not hold in this generation. Because no convention will hold unless it is supported by numbers. If a large group of persons agree on something, then members of that group have mutual support. But where this is no longer true, and where religion itself is broken into all kinds of fragments, progressive and conservative, the individual stands alone. He has no major support to fall back on except himself. This being more or less the condition of things, we also find another pressure coming in, which is very largely artificial, but is desperately difficult, even so, and that is economic. The problem of getting hold of money, the problem of gaining luxury through wealth, is becoming more and more obsessive. The individual comes to the conclusion that the final answer to all questions regarding his own life is success. And yet, at the same time, he cannot point out very many successful people who are any happier than those with less means. The successful have their own drama and tragedy. Those less successful have not only a less intensive standard, but have greater yearnings to be of that group which is opulent. So today, whereas in the times gone by, life was lived on a reasonably conservative level, extravagance is the order of the day. Extravagance is also part of the great intensification of the industrial civilization. More and more we produce, more and more we have to find ways to sell what we produce, and still more we have to find ways of making means by which we can buy.
with this tremendous economic situation hanging over on mortgages, on monthly rentals, on buying condominiums, even a successful summer ranch house or a mobile home, these things have all become immense problems. Problems that have to be faced by persons in various development patterns and also in various economic situations. One of the things, of course, that has resulted in a kind of boom in which there is more money than probably we have ever had before is due to the fact that those persons who are not in debt have a greater spending power because either their homes are paid for or they are proprietored into a proper home situation. But where the thing continues to be unsettled and unsecure, we have the problem of pressure. How to get more money. And that is cutting into home life in a devastating way. I moved 25, 50 years ago, grandparents were a great asset because when the younger people wanted a little break from the pressures of home life, the parents were there as babysitters and as custodians and were recognized as valuable members of the family. Not long ago, I noted an article where it stated that a babysitter for a certain family paid $5 an hour to sit for the family was one of the grandparents. $5 an hour to sit for your own granddaughter. Well, $5 is important to some people today. $5 is the difference between this and that. $5 is the way of spending $5 for something you really didn't need, but now we could get it. And little by little, these things add up. Now, in some cases, the $5 is a vital factor. But in this angle of the situation, the family, the home, is under a certain new debit pattern. The individual who might, in the older days, have a whole family behind him, now stands very largely alone. Another problem that is becoming very intense in this issue is the development of a very much heavier economic pattern for families. Today, if there are three adults in a family, they all work or are trying to. This is a situation in which perhaps it wasn't really necessary, but it is done just the same. As a result of this, there is no one who has the freedom, the liberties, the energies, and the time to carry on those basic responsibilities for family life which God and nature have demanded. And where these family relationships are damaged or disregarded, you have a new kind of pressure. And that pressure develops, in many cases, into the broken home. Actually, the home life is no longer a very important thing in itself to many people. To some, it will always be the most important. But those people are gradually dropping out, and the new generation considers the home to be basically a boarding house, a place where they come at the end of the day, but give nothing to it as an emotional life experience. They come home from work, sit in front of the television, eat a television dinner which they bought in the store, and that is the evening. This type of situation is bound to lead to troubles. In the man's and the human being's basic nature requires several types of nutrition. The individual who has no inner leadership by which he can control his own appetites has very little self-respect either. Alcoholism increases, narcotic addiction increases, and these are escapes, primarily escapes from the problems of society, but escapes from the weakness of character within the person. Where we cannot handle a problem or a responsibility without artificial stimulation, or cannot live with ourselves without artificial sedation, then there is something wrong with our relation to ourselves. And this is something society cannot cure, but it is something that psychologically society is against. It is against that which interferes anytime, anywhere, and in any way with the fulfillment of our own personal desires. Now, it's wonderful to have all kinds of desires, but it is also dangerous to the person. And nature apparently gives us these kind of problems, as St. Gregory remarked many, many centuries ago. The purpose of problem is to strengthen character. And any problem that is not right, that is compromised and not solved, is going to return to haunt us. The individual must recognize that the instructional part of life does not end with high school. The individual does not gain it through the university. Education continues from the moment of birth to the moment of death. There is no break in the educational process. And there are a great many people who firmly believe that the educational process also goes on after death. Buddhists have often had this point of view, and in the Buddhist paradise, the individual does not sit around playing a harp, nor does he bask in flowery beds of ease. According to the Buddhist tradition, those who pass into the better underworlds or after-death states are sitting under trees with their teachers, learning down through the ages. Here or there, always at school. This is perhaps an interesting thought, but it has certain advantages. It is because the individual and the philosophy which he is following has also come to the conclusion that learning never ends. That learning is not something you forget the moment you get a graduation card or a diploma. Learning never ends until the lessons are learned. And because of the nature of the universe, the lessons that we still have to learn are many, and some of them difficult. Actually, therefore, in trying to solve the moment's comfort, we endanger the future of ourselves and those we care for. The attitudes that we have on living, the philosophies we try to dream up, the escape mechanisms which our neighbors are addicted to, all of these delinquencies or deficiencies represent part of the endowment of the inner life. We have to live with it. We have to overcome it. And these delinquencies we fall into, whether actually physical or merely mental and emotional, are like habits of alcoholism and narcotics. The individual who lives only to have fun is an alcoholic if he never had a drink in his life, because his attitude is the very thing that alcohol artificially seems to cause. But in reality, alcohol is all these things that are escape mechanisms, is actually not a stimulant. It is merely a depressant of character. So this type of situation goes on, and gradually there comes into the home the beginning of responsibility. And this responsibility has a background of many different values and types and sources. Some of the responsibility is due to the fact that many persons are over-educated and under-learned. They have gone through all the matriculations that they could stand, and I know one young man now is hard at work. He's been in school so long that it's going to be wonderful and remarkable if he graduates in time for Social Security. He's already had nearly 20 years of education, and the end is not yet, because he has a couple of courses half finished and four more he intends to take. So this type of person has lived in a theoretical atmosphere. He has lived in a world bounded by the campuses of schools. He is gradually learning to be a completely abstract person, one who will never be able to earn anything because his specialties are not within the narrow gauge of computer specializations that we have today. His education is also so faulty in substance that he is often confused as to which of his professors is the most difficult to follow. So anyway, this process goes on until the individual, from one reason or another, decides to start out in life. Starting out in life is variously hazarded. The problems of education are falsely advanced. I remember back in the old days when I was working in New York in an insurance company. The head of the company was always in the process of interviewing some candidate for some job, like office boy or assistant secretary to an assistant secretary. And when the candidate stood in front of him, my esteemed uncle looked at him very firmly. He said to him, "Are you overeducated or do you want to work?" That usually stopped them. The question is not even asked anymore. It is assumed before they come that they don't intend to work. They expect to climb in a very few years to an executive position. And then they're going to make other people toe the mark. And, of course, when nations do that, we have another war. This is the way the process is run. But some young people, nice, good people, start out to try to build a world together. They start out in an atmosphere of insecurity. Both of these young people, if they decide they're going to try to get together and get married, both of them are inexperienced, not only in terms of life, but in terms of education. They are not equipped for the jobs they want. They're going to have to fight all kinds of competition to get enough and hold on to enough to have a decent personal life. This type of thing is itself nearly always a problem for compatibilities and incompatibilities. Another problem that always seems to come up in these matters is the inability of the inexperienced person to select a suitable mate to accompany them through life. It is a matter of glamour. It is a matter of a game. And it has to be played with great enthusiasm, regardless of the consequences. So the marriage may start by two people who should never have married, who do not have the same interests, do not have the same integrities, but are simply looking for something else to make them happy. Happiness is the answer, not ability to create it. So these start out, and in a sense, we now have the modern picture of both young people working at some kind of a job that was going to enable them to have their apartment or something that they can afford, and they're going to start in going along under a considerable glamour. Everything is very wonderful, very glamorous, and very much in the spirit of the fairy tale and the legend, the happy ever afterwards technique. Now, after a little while, it begins to become apparent that people cannot make statements or make adjustments which are not natural to them. They cannot live inconsistencies forever. And they cannot overlook each other's mistakes and limitations unless they are very, very wise people. Their money problem is still holding them. The hope and glamour of the future is strong within them. They already see themselves with a home in the mountains and a swimming pool. They are looking forward to big cars, wonderful times, long vacation, all kinds of luxuries. And they're trying desperately to the best of their ability to get to the condition where they can have these things. These things become so desperately important that they have broken millions of homes. Then along comes a further complication, the arrival of a child. Very many people cannot accept parenthood. In order to be a good parent, you have to be unselfish. The moment selfishness comes first, the home is endangered. And selfishness very often arises with the first child. The husband, who has been having complete association and control of his family life, and who is the object of the adoration of his mate, suddenly finds that she is dividing her attention between a newborn child who has constant requirements and a husband who has learned to be waited on. Crash, the thing hits a very difficult situation. Then comes something which is as artificial as any institution ever was, and that is the problem of not being able to have the necessary means and associate values to meet the gradually increasing cost of family life. There is simply no way in which the average person can face many of the debilities and problems. I know one case in which a young married couple had only been married a year and a half when the first child came, and when the child was 11 months old, it had to have a very serious brain surgery. Well, it practically broke the family. And the strain of it, the impossibility of it, unless there was very heavy unionized insurance and things of that nature, the tragedy was more than the young family could stand. Instead of glowing together in a Cinderella relationship, these two people had to devote their time for over 2 years to nothing but saving the child. Well, they were young. They had no background. They had no sense of strength. They never expected to be called upon for such an emergency. They had developed some outside interests. Now these had to be sacrificed. And little by little, what might have been a beautiful home develops into a clinic in which all the members are disturbed by one cause or another. Under this pressure, it is not unusual to find a breakup. A breakup in which sometimes the burden is too heavy for an unprepared young group, or on the other case, the expenses are too great to have any hope for future realization of dreams. Now, another factor, of course, is that the dream mechanism is getting very strong these days. There are very few people whose hope for the future is a moderate life. They want to hope that they are going to become one of those few who will be given great and unusual privileges. This situation is further glamorized or brought home by the media, by television, by various unbelievable and incredible financial conditions, in which an individual works a lifetime with hardly enough to get by, and someone else makes $5 or $10 million a year. This type of thing is completely destructive to society. And wherever the division between the people into two great groups, this division is on the basis of finance, it has ended in revolution. And it has also ended in a great breakup in families, where one person wants a quiet and moderate life, and the other demands more and more all the time. So we come finally to all and many causes by means of which marriage is broken. And in the place of marriage, we suddenly find divorce. Now, when you were married in the older days, you followed very largely the marriage ritual of the Church of England or the Catholic Church. The Protestant ritual gave us the real simple statement that we were going to live together, love, honor, and assist, till death do us part. This is now so unreasonable, so unlikely, that to make a statement of this kind and bind oneself to it as an obligation taken before God, this is more than the majority of young people will keep. The result is they break their obligation, which is the beginning of a very serious breakdown of moral structure. And if it continues the way it is going now, the till death do us part will gradually fade away, as it was in the days of obey. To love, honor, and obey. Who is obeying anybody? So that has been gradually dropped, without the benefit of clergy, into being love, honor, and assist. And in time the assist will go, then the honor will go, and then the love will go. And we will have a very empty marriage rite. Yet we do find something else. Namely, that the chances of a home surviving are greater if a marriage is solemnized by religion than when it is the result of the labor of a judge or a justice of the peace. The memory of a religious obligation is strong inside of the person and very often lingers through and comes back in later years after it has been forgotten for a long time. It is something inside of the individual who wants to keep the rules, and something on the outside that says, well, if you keep the rules, you'll be poor all your life. Now, this is an inconsistency that certainly should never exist. Actually, also, let us think for a moment, these rules, where did these great orders of rules come from? What is the origin of the Ten Commandments, or the Sermon on the Mount, or the ministrations of Paul? Where did they come from? They came from the long experience of mankind. They were gathered not directly from the tops of mountains, but in the long struggle of the individual to achieve control of his own nature, to create civilization instead of chaos in the world. He has to integrate civilization and not chaos inside himself. There isn't hardly a rule that has descended to us from the great religions of the world that is not practical. And there is hardly a single practical rule in these works which have not been broken by devout followers of that religion. The result is that we are trying to live outside of the rules. And those who are strong create tyrannies. And those who are weak are enslaved, regardless of the political structure in which they live. Everything is at sixes and sevens. And this flows in upon a very delicately balanced home life. Well, there are all kinds of attitudes that have been taken towards matters of this kind. And a considerable amount of psychiatric or psychological counseling has been successful. It helps people to realize the common ways of life that have to be followed. And probably the best of all such counseling is that which points out the tragedy of selfishness and self-interest. That the individual, to be a good member of a family, must put the good of the family above his own personal interests and desires. Otherwise, the family is in constant danger. Now, what is divorce finally going to do for the individual who has to go through it? Well, one rather intelligent woman whom I knew, around whom it is said that the Plaza Hotel in New York did all its rebuilding without interfering with the objects on her mantelpiece. This particular woman had a good family, and her husband passed on. They apparently were congenial. But she was still quite not too old in years, and everyone wondered why she didn't marry again, because she was wealthy and attractive and very well a leader in New York society and political life. So one day she told me, she said, "You know, I would rather be alone by myself than alone with someone else." This was her solution to the problem. And those who have passed through this type of tragedy, either through death of a partner or through a divorce, will probably find in the long run that there are lessons that they are going to have to learn. And to the degree that they learn these lessons, their lives will be richer. One of the things that has to happen, at least on the part of one person involved, is that they get over the indignation that may be caused, that they are not turning in hatred to the person whom they feel has damaged their lives. You've got to get hate out of it. Because as long as hate is there, nothing will be learned. And when nothing is learned, then a separation is a true disaster. It is not a disaster if everybody learns something. And this is one of the important problems. And also, in a matter of this nature, each individual should be able to maintain a decent personal feeling each for the other. If this is impossible, then one side that cannot get this feeling is going to have to learn to get another feeling, and that is forgiveness. There cannot be any merit from a divorce if these persons separating have not learned something inside of themselves. They must examine their own lives to see to what degree they are responsible. And instead of always assuming that the other person is to blame, they have to decide as best they can where the values were and what destroyed them. The individual who gains or has a divorce to gain freedom from a responsibility that is normal and proper is making a serious mistake. An individual who is separating from another person does not come out of it a little more wise and a little more kind and a little more forgiving than before, has lost one of the great opportunities of life.